My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others, like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect Purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
In life and recovery, every day is a little different. Embrace the good days, the not-so-good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
As the exclusive sponsor for our show, the law firm of Condori and Murad will guide you and your family in the right direction. They'll help you draft a will, set up a trust, or create a healthcare power of attorney. Schedule a free consultation with their estate planning attorneys at kmlawyers.com and be sure to tell them Grant and Danny sent you. To get a discount, mention the show, kmlawyers.com. Our training camp coverage out in Ashburn has been going all week long, presented by Paul Henry's Window Installation, paulhenryswindows.com, your clear home improvement choice. One of my favorite ways to cover camp, though, is to get the perspective of some of the national people I really respect who come through town and get a look at the Commanders, who are able to juxtapose what they're seeing here with other teams because they're on tours and seeing a lot of clubs. And one of those folks I wanted to touch base with is on the BetQL guest hotline. Bet smarter to beat the books. Download the BetQL app. Visit BetQL.com. And that's Robert Mays, the host of the Athletic Football Show. You know him from his work previously at Grantland and The Ringer. He's outstanding. Robert, thanks so much for the time. It's Grant Paulson in D.C. How are you?
Doing well. Appreciate you having me.
My pleasure. Let's just start with your thoughts on the Commanders, the vibes of their camp, as you dropped in for a day.
It seemed really good. I mean, I'm not surprised. I think that Dan Quinn, that's what you're banking on, right? That's what you're looking for when you hire somebody like that, who's going to bring a certain level of energy and just a certain approach. And obviously, it's pretty far removed from the way that things have felt there over the last several years. I think we all knew that was hopefully going to be the case with new ownership. And I do think that Dan is the type of person to, at least early on, kind of change the way that people feel when they're coming to work. And that was kind of my general impression of how things felt over there.
Robert, I know in one practice, you may or may not get to see a ton from individual players, right? But Jaden Daniels has looked very good by all accounts. I want to know what you saw specifically, and maybe more importantly, what you heard from the people that you did talk to in town about the rookie QB.
Yeah, I never like taking one day and making any grand proclamations about it, because some guys look good, some guys don't. You're going half speed. If we're trying out different personnel groupings, like, training camp is just such a crapshoot in that way. So I did think that he made some very impressive throws down the field. I was there on Tuesday, and Tuesday they probably had 3-4 20 to 40 yard completions down the sideline. He had one to Jahan Dotson on a slot fade that was really impressive. From a football perspective, I would say some of the movement in the pocket and some of the things he did a little bit later in the down were impressive to me, just because at LSU he took off a lot in those situations. So seeing him kind of play from the pocket a little bit deeper into the play was encouraging. I would say the bigger takeaways, the more important takeaways, though, are what you learn from people or hear from people during conversations. And talking to somebody on the offensive staff just about the way that he processes the game and how impressive that part of it is, that's what's encouraging to me. You know, obviously you can pick up some of that when you're watching a guy play in college, but you don't know necessarily what the progressions are, you know, how he's seeing things. And from everything that I had heard, just how developed and how mature he is mentally at this stage, a week into camp, is a notable bit of progress from a guy who obviously has a ton of physical talent. That's never been in question.
More of a broad question for you here, Robert, and Robert Mays is my guest, the Athletic Football Show. You mentioned not liking to base a whole lot on one practice, right, worth of eval. What about just general training camp evaluation? I mean, I ask this because, like, I'm out there and I see him and he looks really good or what have you, and that's great, but I got the sense, and I'm not knocking him, I'm really excited about how he looks and everything I'm hearing, but he clearly had a great idea of what they were doing offensively, and I think at this point at camp, he's got a great idea of what the defense is doing too. And I think that matters, and I want to see him against the Jets and other teams. You know, you see it other places where, with Drake May, let's say, where from a week ago where, you know, he's splitting reps and he could be the guy to now Colin Cowherd telling us that Joe Milton will start over him if it's not Jacoby Brissett. Like, what do you make just generally of early training camp evaluations in general?
I think it's really difficult. It's really difficult on several different levels. One, I think that most sports writers, God bless them, probably don't know what they're looking at when you're watching a training camp practice. And I would throw myself into that equation as well. We can have a sense of maybe who made a nice play here or there, but I think that the nuts and bolts of it are really difficult to pick up, especially from the vantage point you're looking at it from on the sideline if you're not somebody with a really trained eye that understands what they're doing. So I think that's a barrier to it. Also, the way that things are installed in training camp is different everywhere. You know, there are some teams that are going to throw in, they're saying, all right, we're going to install what we're going to install no matter what. Like, we're just going to take it along at the pace of how we do this. The defense may be doing it differently. So the looks may not necessarily be synced up with what you're doing on offense and what they're doing on defense. So much of training camp is figuring out, all right, who should play next to who? What are our right pairings of players? So they're going to inherently be combinations of guys that you're trotting out there that aren't going to look very good because it's about trial and error. So I just don't really know how much, from a layman's point of view, you can take watching even several training camp practices if you're not watching the film and if you're not truly understanding how stuff is being installed and what a team is trying to accomplish that day.
Robert Mays does watch the film and does have a really good feel for offense, and it's one of the reasons I really like his work, the Athletic Football Show here on Grant and Danny. With that in mind, what's your level of confidence in the Cliff Kingsbury-Daniels relationship? I got to be honest, I'm very curious about Kingsbury. I'm hopeful, but I'm not convinced. And that's one of the reasons I really don't know what to expect about this season.
Yeah, I think that I would probably share those same concerns. You know, Cliff obviously did a lot of really innovative stuff when he got into the league. And I say that just because it was different than a lot of NFL offenses that you were watching. There's a lot of four wide, you know, a lot of air raid type ideas. I would say over his time in Arizona, things got a little more quote-unquote traditional. They started using more two tight end sets, and I think he really got a better grasp of maybe some of the things he needed to do to tailor his types of ideas to the NFL game. But I still feel like, for the most part, if you watch those teams, it was a lot of scattered designs that, to me, at times lacked cohesion and a broader plan. Now, if you look at the best offenses in the league and the connective tissue and the things that tie them together, one thing leads to another. You know, a run concept is tied to a pass concept. I'm doing this to set up this. It's all part of a bigger plan. And at times in Arizona, I just never got a grasp of what that bigger plan was. So even if there are some interesting ideas with, well, I'm going to use this guy in this way, and you know, you can kind of trot out that those sorts of talking points in July, when you get into the season and it's about having a core set of beliefs that you can build on and innovate with, and I just have issues and potential concerns with that based on how things went the last time we saw him doing this in Arizona.
Yeah, ranked 16th, 15th, 14th in his three full seasons as the head coach and play caller in yards per play with the Cardinals. One more thing on the Commanders, and then I want to bounce around to some of the other camps you were at. Just how much better do you think this defense might be with Quinn and Joe Witt taking over for Rivera and his staff, and with all the moves they made, including Dorrance Armstrong up front, Bobby Wagner in the middle, Jeremy Chinn on the back end? It's going to be a lot of new faces.
There's no doubt. And I think I'm encouraged by what they can be. I understand a lot of the moves that they made. A guy like Frankie Louvu and some of the flexibility that Frankie Louvu provides you. Jeremy Chinn is the same idea, where I think that one of the benefits and one of the real strengths of those Dan Quinn defenses in Dallas is that they had a lot of different personnel that they could throw at you. They played a lot of 6 DB looks, etc. I don't think they'll do that necessarily quite as much because the linebackers on this team are better and deeper than they were in Dallas, but that same flexibility I think is something that you're searching for. And just play style. You know, in conversations with people there and Dan specifically, the guys that they added this offseason, I think it was more about, we want to make sure we're bringing a certain feel of player and a certain mentality to this group. And I think that they accomplished that. Dorrance Armstrong, I always felt, was a guy who really embodied the way the Cowboys wanted to play. He played with a certain attitude. You have that guy. Frankie Louvu plays that way. Mikey Sainer still, I think, really set that sort of feeling for the Michigan defense that you watched last year. So one of the things that I think was so cool about those Dallas defenses is you could feel the energy that they brought every single week, even if the schematics of it all weren't necessarily the most complicated and at times that were almost a little bit too simplistic. But if you're bringing a certain vibe as a defense, you can overcome some of those shortcomings in terms of the structure of it all. And I think the guys they added this offseason, they have a chance to potentially get to that point with some of those sorts of players.
The Commanders, just one of the stops Robert Mays has made as he's traversed the National Football League training camp carousel over the last week. Let's go to the Cardinals. I know you were out in Arizona at one point with them. They drafted Marvin Harrison atop the board to help Kyler Murray. They're coming off their second straight 4-13 season. This sounds funny to say because I was making fun of the Gannon hire and his opening, you know, foray as a coach as much as anybody. But I'm surprised when I looked them up to see they were 4-13. I would have guessed like 6-11. I feel like they played a lot of teams close. They were a pain in the butt. They get Murray back for a full season now. What's the sight line for them?
The comparison that I've made, and I think that it actually works in a bunch of different ways, is that season last year from the Cardinals reminded me a lot of the first Dan Campbell season in Detroit, where there's not a lot of talent. They're just doing everything they can to rebuild and reset the roster, but they played hard, and you could just feel the transition in what the roster felt like and just the play style and just the overall approach. And I think that Arizona was very similar. You know, obviously the Lions traded out their play caller halfway through the year, but Ben Johnson eventually takes that job. And I thought they were doing a lot of really interesting things in the back half of that season for the Lions. You can say the same thing about Drew Petzing and what he was doing in Arizona last year. You know, this is a team without a lot of talent up front that was the most efficient rushing team in the NFL down the back half of last season. And I think that that's because of the person dialing things up and because of maybe some underrating that we've done of the personnel. You drop Marvin Harrison Jr. into there. You have Kyler Murray, who looks much more comfortable in that system by the end of last season. And I really think they have a chance to surprise some people offensively. On defense, they're still piecing it together. That's very much a work in progress. But I think they want to be, you know, a team that's consistently competitive, could potentially finish around 500. And that sort of outcome and that sort of season would put them pretty much in line with that trajectory that we had seen from Detroit in their first couple of years.
Let's head to the Chargers. You were there before we found out Justin Herbert's dealing with plantar fascia is not going to be able to play again until probably the first week of the season or so, right around week one, which isn't going to help them get ready. But having brought in Jim Harbaugh, new GM Joe Ortiz, new offensive coordinator Greg Roman and Jesse Minter with the Michigan ties on the defensive side, I get the sense Harbaugh is not trying to do a long rebuild, years and years of trying to build this thing up. But, man, is that Herbert loss this preseason with the new offense and new teammates seem damaging. What did you make of your stop there?
They really couldn't add much this offseason because even though it's not a long rebuild, they kind of took their medicine from a salary cap perspective that I think is going to set them up okay to be ready next year to start adding pieces again. But for the most part, you know, it's Joe Alt, it's Junior Colson, it's the draft picks that they were able to make, Ladd McConkey, and really the only notable multi-year free agent signing that they had was Will Disley, the tight end. So they're pretty much rolling it back out this season with one new tackle and mostly the same personnel on both sides. But they still think that they can have some real results, I think in part just because of a change in priorities. The run game under the previous regime was just allowed to kind of die on the vine. They didn't spend enough time on it. They didn't prioritize it enough. And they're really hoping that if they look to an offense and an offensive system that lives through that, that that can be the bones of kind of how they play and what their identity is, that they can get a ton better play along the offensive line, and they can really establish themselves as a team that runs the ball efficiently. And everything else can kind of flow from there. Justin Herbert overcoming a lack of weapons. And that's a real big bet on Jim Harbaugh and Greg Roman specifically, where even if the players aren't better, we're going to get different results because of how we approach this. And it really did seem like that was the set of bets that they were making. And, you know, without Justin Herbert, obviously it doesn't all come together. But if he can get back healthy, we'll see what sort of outcomes they get on the other side of that.
Yeah, it's a floor-raising endeavor, if nothing else, to make sure that that running game gets its act together. Maybe doesn't elevate the ceiling right away, but that's where Justin Herbert and some of the playmaking he can do down the field comes into play there. The other of the L.A. teams, the Rams, who you made a stop in with, this is one of the most difficult teams to peg, I think, right now in all of football. We know the Niners are going to be a tough customer in the West. I think you stopped in with the Seahawks as well. I feel like they're going to take a step back. But are the Rams a true contender still, a playoff team post-Aaron Donald here? They drafted the two Florida State kids up front with Jared Verse and Brandon Fisk, and maybe the whole thing surrounds Matthew Stafford's health. I should also point out that if you guys want, you should check out Robert's interview with Sean McVay. Did an hour sit-down, which was really, really cool. But do you view the Rams as like a double-digit win team on paper going into the year right now?
I do. I just think that the ceiling for the offense is incredibly high. And obviously they lost Jonah Jackson already, which that's a concern just because he's had a real injury history when he was in Detroit. But this team was one of the most efficient offenses in the league last year when Matthew Stafford and Kyren Williams were both on the field. And if Stafford can stay healthy or relatively healthy for 15-ish games, and Cooper Kupp is coming into the season healthy, and he's practicing full speed, he looks really good. This is a group that I think has a chance to be the best offense in the league if things break right for them. Defensively, obviously, there are more questions, but I think they really did a good job of solving some of the problems from last year. You go out and get a guy like Cam Curl, who, I mean, you guys know in Washington, obviously, isn't a superstar, but is a solid player. Darius Williams at corner, same sort of deal. If you can piece it together on the back end, and those guys, the young defensive linemen that you're talking about, the aggregate from those guys can give them solid play up front. I think it can be a frisky defense that gets to a level that if they really hit their ceiling on offense, they can compete to not only win the NFC West, but you know maybe even do more than that when we get to the playoffs.
Last team I'll ask you about from your tour is the Eagles back here on the East Coast in the NFC East. Something was sour. Something was broken and was just rotten internally at the end of the year. Sirianni survived. They have new coordinators on both sides of the ball, Kellen Moore, Vic Fangio, and operation number one, I'm sure, is getting Jalen Hurts back to playing at the level where he was an MVP, you know, prototype and out-dueled Mahomes in a Super Bowl loss. What did your state tell you about whether or not they can knock off Dallas and get back to the top of the division?
I had a really, really good visit with the Eagles yesterday and just kind of talking about some of their plans in the offseason. And I think that bringing in Kellen Moore, who's called plays before, it really frees Sirianni up to be the head coach and to kind of oversee things where he's making sure and tending to the culture and how things are going day to day and the way that guys are playing. And I think that's good. I think that we've seen that benefit guys in other places. We talked about Dan Campbell. We talked about Jonathan Gannon maybe being a little bit better than we thought. Those are guys who don't really have much of a hand in the way that the offense and defense of those teams work, or at least not as much as some other coaches. And I think that that change in purview is potentially beneficial for Sirianni. And then what Kellen Moore is bringing, I think that that offense last year and the way that it was structured under Brian Johnson, they were just trying to keep things rolling from what Shane Steichen was doing. And I think that the little ways that they tried to innovate weren't additive to taking the offense in a new direction. And by the end of last season, I think you had a system that had stagnated to the point that it was no longer fit for the modern NFL. And some of the ideas that Kellen Moore is bringing in, whether it's more motion, how Jalen Hurts is reading stuff out, a bunch of different elements of this, I think that they have a chance to be better equipped for anything that defenses are going to throw at them. And, you know, that's a rosy outlook that we can easily have on August 2nd. We'll see what happens when the games actually start. But I understand the plan this offseason and how they were going to try to get from where they were at the end of last year to where this team was back in 2022.
You guys should be following Robert on social media. He's at Robert Mays on Twitter. The tour continues. Appreciate you carving out a few minutes for us today. Thanks so much, and travel safely.
Absolutely. Anytime.
Robert Mays of the Athletics Football Show here on Grant and Danny on The Fan. Logan Paulson to localize the conversation coming up at 6. He's been every Commander's practice all camp long. Next, we are overdue for an audio vault, people. And with Danny not here today, the kids get to run the asylum a little bit. And we're going to audio vault this thing right here on Grant and Danny.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex Grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
In life, some days are good, and some could be better. The same is true for recovery. Both take work. Both take adjustments. Finding your path is a key part of your journey. And then it's all about walking it every day. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Be open to every part of the journey and welcome it. It's unique and it's all part of you. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Oh, such a clutch off-season pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
And a minimal salary cap hit. Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Go to Blinds.com for up to 45% off and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Go right now for up to 45% off at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Congratulations to Aaron Judge, who's going to appear in Paw Patrol in an episode with Rubble and crew with his real-life dogs, Penny and Gus, on August 26th. Judge's wife, Samantha, is going to serve as the guest voice of Penny the puppy. It's a big day for Aaron Judge. You are making it on Disney. My kids will know who you are. Congratulations to Aaron Judge. It is time on G&D without the D part of the show today to give you an audio vault, some of the best audio we found while scraping every nook and cranny of the internet. I don't even know if I want to go in this vault. They made it so creepy. It's like, follow me. You'll never, ever see the light of day again. Just so it's supposed to be fun going in the audio vault. It's supposed to hop in and maybe do a little jig, maybe do the gritty with Justin Jefferson or something. This guy went like, come over here, kids. I've got candy in my car. Like, that was a weird way that they put that audio together. But shout out to them getting it done. Where to begin in the audio vault? Let's start with this teaser for Hard Knocks. The Chicago Bears training camp version of Hard Knocks will debut on Tuesday, episode one. It sounds like we are going to see some of the rookies for the Chicago Bears speaking to the team. And when addressing the team, one of the things you have to tell your teammates is what your signing bonus is. And needless to say, Caleb Williams, the number one overall pick in 2024, got a pretty big signing bonus.
Caleb Williams went to USC in Oklahoma. Horns down still. Fight on.
Yeah.
And my signing bonus is 25.5.
The visual's just amazing. Guys are literally hopping around. Tyson Bagent's in the front row sitting there, and he acts like he's having like a heart attack, and his heart's beating out of his chest. I think the reason they lose their mind when he says $25.5 million, in addition to it being funny, is because they're going to make him pay for so many things. Like, they're going to dinner that night. He's picking up the tab. They're going to dinner the next night. He's also picking up the tab. But Hard Knocks, bring it on. The training camp version with the Bears. Now that we've seen off-season Hard Knocks, and we know that that's way better, it does water this down a little bit. There's some pressure on HBO and the NFL Films crew to elevate their training camp game. But you can't do this show wrong. No matter what, even a worse version than the off-season Giants installment is going to hit the spot. It's like a delicious chocolate chip cookie. There's never been a bad one. So Tuesday night, debut, Hard Knocks, let's do this thing. Last evening, speaking of debuts, the 2024 preseason kicked off. Joe Buck was on the call with Troy Aikman on ESPN and on ABC here. I was watching the game locally, giving some love to the ABC affiliate in town. But Joe Buck, while calling the game, made a prediction, speaking of Hard Knocks, about what one of the major storylines is going to be. Right before the two guys he's saying took over the game, scored a touchdown. One of those only in broadcasting chef's kiss moments. I loved it.
Is there any doubt that the Bears, who are going to be featured on Hard Knocks this year, the recap of this game will be Liev Schreiber talking about Brett Rypien and receiver Colin Johnson?
Well, there's no doubt now.
Third down and four. End zone, why not? How about some more? Number 80, Colin Johnson and Liev get ready to say his name into the microphone. And Brett Rypien, what a body of work tonight. 9-yard touchdown. And Colin Johnson is making a statement here tonight.
Let's hope you're the summoner, Dave. Joe Buck summoning Brett Rypien, Colin Johnson. You know, these guys have been great. They're going to be the stars of Hard Knocks. What a game they're having. What a performance this has been. This has been their night. Rypien back to pass, Colin Johnson touchdown. When it works out, it works out. It's like the broadcaster saying, last time these two guys faced each other on a 2-0 pitch, Dameron hit a home run down the left field line. The 2-0 pitch, Dameron crushes it down the left field line. It could be. It might be. You love when it works out that way. Speaking of baseball, let's talk Austin Hayes on the audio vault. Hayes, longtime Baltimore Oriole, traded last week to the Philadelphia Phillies. May have put his foot in his mouth just a little bit as far as his former teammates are concerned. Listen closely to what Austin Hayes said as he first met with the Phillies media, juxtaposing his new team and his old team.
There's not very many teams you could feel like you're upgrading in a way from where you were when your team was in first place, but that's how I feel. I feel like I'm coming into a place where we have an even better chance of winning a World Series, so I'm really excited to be here.
Orioles fans did not take that very well. Now, I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt here. I think if you hear the entire quote there in context, and we played it that way on purpose, what you see is his point was the Orioles are so good that by getting traded from Baltimore, there was almost no way that I was going to go to a place as good as Baltimore or that would have as good or maybe even in this case a better chance to win a World Series. And the Phillies might be the only team, one of the few teams where I have a better chance to win a title. But the headline when you just pull the quote was the Phillies have a better chance to win a World Series than the Orioles. Wouldn't it be interesting if those two teams met in the Fall Classic? And Austin Hayes' quote, you know it would be shown. I could see Joe Davis with his big deep pipes on Fox now with like the quote written. He's reading it and for before game one. This is what Austin Hayes said after he was traded. You know it would come back up. And I actually think that would just be, not only because regionally speaking, Baltimore, Philly, both very close to one another, both close to D.C., they've been arguably the two best teams in their respective leagues this year. All apologies to the Cleveland Guardians. I want to see that. I think it'd be fun. And the Austin Hayes storyline would make it even better. Some of his teammates, a little bit miffed, I'm sure, by the comment as well. But if they actually dig in, listen to the whole thing, I don't think they'd be that angry. You guys know I'm a sucker for motivational quotes. And I really, really love good pep talks. And that means I love Mike Tomlin. In fact, as an aside, I still go back and watch a few of my favorite speeches, like semi-regularly, one of which is Denzel Washington giving a speech to a graduating class, and there are others that I really, really enjoy. The Inches speech from Any Given Sunday, among them, there's just certain speeches that I love. Mike Tomlin is the kind of guy that I feel like cuts a movie promo, a speech in the locker room every Sunday, that if we saw it, we'd want to run through a brick wall. I just loved this message. He was talking to some young up-and-coming athletes that want to eventually play professionally. Forgive the music at the very beginning of this clip that's super annoying, and work past that to hear the message from Tomlin, which I thought was great.
How many of y'all think y'all can, like, run really fast? Who's a speedster? Okay, hands down. Who can jump really far? Who's a leaper? Who's got a vert? Great, okay, hands down. Who's really strong? If you're a strong guy, you know, you don't win physical confrontation, you don't lose physical confrontations. Beautiful, great. None of that matters. None of it matters. Hear me. It's not what you're capable of, it's what you're willing to do. Everybody hear me? It's not what you're capable of, is what you're willing to do. I know plenty of people that are capable. I know fewer people that are willing. You know what I mean? Will is a powerful thing. Ask yourself, what are you willing to do? How many?
I love Mike Tomlin. What a beast. That would be, you could pay someone to be your motivational speaker where he just has to record a message for you every morning or call you when you're not feeling at your best and give you a little pep talk. He is on my short list. Very, very successful. No matter what he does, that's a guy that's going to shine, and he's done it as a National Football League head coach. A lot made about how long it's been since the Steelers got to or won a Super Bowl, but they have never had a losing season under Mike Tomlin, and that will cap the audio vault today. Here on Grant and Danny, some of the audio around the web the last several days we've seen that we thought would be worth you hearing. I do have to clean something up from the corrections department, and I've got to thank not a listener, but the wife of a listener. Ryan says, my wife wanted me to correct you. Paw Patrol's on Nickelodeon, not Disney. So Aaron Judge will not be on Disney. He will be on Nickelodeon.
How could you mess that up?
You would think I would know that.
That's unbelievable.
Here's where I got to level with you. We're not a big Paw Patrol family. Now, do my kids like Paw Patrol? Fine. When they bump into it, they do. Have I taken them to the movie theater to see the Paw Patrol movie? Absolutely. We were a Puppy Dog Pals family. We are a Spidey and His Amazing Friends family. All of the stuff, Peppa Pig, or a bunch of the things that we watch, I could tell you where to find it. What app do I need? Where am I going on the remote? We really never were that into Paw Patrol. There's never been one time where I had to seek that out and put it on. We went to the movies for it. It's just not our wheelhouse. But I will raise my hand and tell you, my bad. That's an error on your boy. I'm going to clean it up. I'm going to finish strong. I'm going to do better. Logan Paulson is on the show at 6. Next on Grant and Danny. The Nats are in full-on tank mode in some ways with 2 months left and the trade deadline in the rear view. They sold off a few of their better players. Why would you keep watching and listening? Well, I've got a few reasons that I think are worth you sticking around down the stretch this season. I'll give those to you next on G&D. If you are on your way to the ballpark tonight listening to Grant and Danny, thank you for making us part of your commute to your baseball priorities this evening. Nationals Brewers playing a night game at Nats Park. 6:45 first pitch. Pregame starts at 6:15. The Nats, all of a sudden, don't look up, have the fourth best odds of getting the number one overall pick. This could actually be the perfect season, by the way, if when they were trying to compete in the competitive portion of the year, they hovered around 500 for longer than everybody thought, felt like they were closer than any of us really maybe thought they were in finishing the rebuild and starting the wild card push. And then as soon as you hit the switch and say, we're selling off, we're not that good, we're overachieving, then you start the tailspin, and maybe you get the number two or number three overall pick again. That's how you got Dylan Cruz when you picked it second overall. I mean, it could go one way or the other. Right now, the Rockies, Marlins, and Angels are the only teams with worse records in baseball than the Nationals. Having said that, if they were to rip off 5 straight wins, they could leapfrog basically, you know, every team picking on paper between 5 and 9. The great benefit is that the A's and the White Sox, who are both worse than them, can't pick ahead of them because of the weird, quirky, stupid Major League Baseball rules about how long you're allowed to pick in the top 5 and the top 10. So it screwed the Nats last year. They actually should have had the number one overall pick, but they weren't allowed to pick in the top 10 a year after having the number two pick as a big market. This year, they're allowed to get back toward the top of the board. But after trading Jesse Winker and Hunter Harvey and Dylan Floro, and most importantly, the controllable Lane Thomas, who's under contract through next season, and getting a nice haul back for those players, now the games matter a little bit less in terms of result, right? The wins and the losses, they've made it pretty clear. This is not really about this season. I know there is a thought internally in the organization, I'm sure, that they would like to do better than they did last year, that it would feel like progress if they were able to surpass last year's win count, and that it would feel like they took a step back if they didn't pull that off, if they weren't able to. Here's where I disagree and don't care about that. If you were trying to win from the start of the season to the end of the season, and you didn't trade Jesse Winker, Lane Thomas, Dylan Floro, Hunter Harvey, and you weren't prioritizing playing young guys or building for next year and beyond, then whether or not you were better than the .438 winning percentage you had last year, which they narrowly are right now, .450, then whether or not you win more than the 71 games you did last year with 91 losses, right now they're on pace for 72, 73 wins, I think it is. It's been mostly 74 before this rough patch they hit the last few days post-trade deadline. Then that would matter. But who cares if you win 68 or 72 or 75 games? After the sell-off, why is that a priority? Why does it matter? The best case scenario is pick as high as possible. Doesn't mean you try to lose. People can't ever understand how this works. The managers, the coaches, the front offices of the teams in these modes are all trying to win every single day. That's their job. But you field a roster, you put together a team that's just not going to win nearly as often, which is what they've done with the trade deadline having now come and gone. And you let the chips fall where they may. And it's, as a fan, so simple. When James Wood or C.J. Abrams or Mackenzie Gore or important players in the long-term health of the organization are at the plate or on the mound, you root like heck for them. When the team's trying to win a baseball game, you want to root in the moment for them to win. No harm, no foul. Go for it. Winning is fun. Winning can help develop. Winning can help build the culture where it needs to be. But if and when they lose a lot of these games, all I'm saying is no reason to really be upset. We're back in the mode that, as a fan base, you've been in the last few years. And it's kind of going to be nice to not have to get as angry or upset when someone doesn't come through with a runner in scoring position or when a reliever blows a game. Because we were kind of, this was pyrite. This was all fool's gold. We were playing house even though we knew we weren't going to end up together. They were not going to be a wild card team. They weren't going to make the playoffs. And for a little while, they hung around in the fight. But here are your reasons, in my opinion, most significant reasons to continue to watch night in and night out. I know I will, to continue to listen to Charlie and Dave here on 106.7 The Fan when you're in the car. Number one, James Wood is going to be must-see TV. What kind of stretch run does he have as he gets more comfortable? He is batting .455 over his last five games. We saw him have a four-hit performance, starting to lift the ball a little more. Does he go on a home run here at some point on this homestand? That would be nice. C.J. Abrams is trying to finish off a 20-homer, 30-steal season. What kind of final month plus 2 months, you know, last third of the season, basically, is he able to mount? And is he going to go 25, 35 and put together a really unique year from a steals and power standpoint that we haven't seen, as he's forged himself now into all-star conversation, played in the all-star game this year, and into star status here in D.C.? Another big storyline is, when does Dylan Cruz get called up? Do they call him up in the next week or two? Do they wait until September and keep his rookie eligibility available to him next year so that they can possibly get a draft pick as a reward for him winning the Rookie of the Year award if that were to happen next season? Is that something that they care about? Or do they just call him up in the next few days and have him play the rest of the year in the big leagues? At some point, he'll be joining this team as their top prospect, and you'll have both Wood and Cruz in the corner outfield. And then lastly, if you want a reason to keep watching the Nats, the young pitching. Mackenzie Gore, Jake Irvin, the Mitchell Parker, DJ Hers, all trying to solidify themselves as answers going into 2025. How many of those guys are going to be fixtures in the rotation? They're all going to get a say in that based on how they perform down the stretch. And I think it's a huge, huge last 2 months, more than anybody else, for Mackenzie Gore, who's really hit a rough patch here and just hasn't thrown the ball well. And they feel like he could be a number two starter for them, a frontline type guy. But he's got to pitch like it and prove it going into the offseason to have a chance to be in the mix to be an opening day starter type for them moving forward. So there's a lot of reasons to continue to monitor, to continue to watch the Nationals as they come down the stretch, even after the trade deadline. They were off yesterday. They're back in action tonight over at Nats Park. Game starts in about 50 minutes. Next, let's talk to my buddy Logan Paulson about Jaden Daniels. How has the kid looked out at camp? Logan's got some answers for us on Grant and Danny. If you are on your way to the ballpark tonight listening to Grant and Danny, thank you for making us part of your commute to your baseball priorities this evening. Nationals Brewers playing a night game at Nats Park. 6:45 first pitch. Pregame starts at 6:15. The Nats, all of a sudden, don't look up, have the fourth best odds of getting the number one overall pick. This could actually be the perfect season, by the way, if when they were trying to compete in the competitive portion of the year, they hovered around 500 for longer than everybody thought, felt like they were closer than any of us really maybe thought they were in finishing the rebuild and starting the wild card push. And then as soon as you hit the switch and say, we're selling off, we're not that good, we're overachieving, then you start the tailspin, and maybe you get the number two or number three overall pick again. That's how you got Dylan Cruz when you picked it second overall. I mean, it could go one way or the other. Right now, the Rockies, Marlins, and Angels are the only teams with worse records in baseball than the Nationals. Having said that, if they were to rip off five straight wins, they could leapfrog basically, you know, every team picking on paper between 5 and 9. The great benefit is that the A's and the White Sox, who are both worse than them, can't pick ahead of them because of the weird, quirky, stupid Major League Baseball rules about how long you're allowed to pick in the top 5 and the top 10. So it screwed the Nats last year. They actually should have had the number 1 overall pick, but they weren't allowed to pick in the top 10 a year after having the number 2 pick as a big market. This year, they're allowed to get back toward the top of the board. But after trading Jesse Winker and Hunter Harvey and Dylan Floro, and most importantly, the controllable Lane Thomas, who's under contract through next season, and getting a nice haul back for those players, now the games matter a little bit less in terms of result, right? The wins and the losses, they've made it pretty clear. This is not really about this season. I know there is a thought internally in the organization, I'm sure, that they would like to do better than they did last year, that it would feel like progress if they were able to surpass last year's win count, and that it would feel like they took a step back if they didn't pull that off, if they weren't able to. Here's where I disagree and don't care about that. If you were trying to win from the start of the season to the end of the season, and you didn't trade Jesse Winker, Lane Thomas, Dylan Floro, Hunter Harvey, and you weren't prioritizing playing young guys or building for next year and beyond, then whether or not you were better than the 438 winning percentage you had last year, which they narrowly are right now, 450, then whether or not you win more than the 71 games you did last year with 91 losses, right now they're on pace for 72, 73 wins, I think it is. It's been mostly 74 before this rough patch they hit the last few days post-trade deadline. Then that would matter. But who cares if you win 68 or 72 or 75 games? After the sell-off, why is that a priority? Why does it matter? The best case scenario is pick as high as possible. Doesn't mean you try to lose. People can't ever understand how this works. The managers, the coaches, the front offices of the teams in these modes are all trying to win every single day. That's their job. But you field a roster, you put together a team that's just not going to win nearly as often, which is what they've done with the trade deadline having now come and gone. And you let the chips fall where they may. And it's, as a fan, so simple. When James Wood or C.J. Abrams or Mackenzie Gore or important players in the long-term health of the organization are at the plate or on the mound, you root like heck for them. When the team's trying to win a baseball game, you want to root in the moment for them to win. No harm, no foul. Go for it. Winning is fun. Winning can help develop. Winning can help build the culture where it needs to be. But if and when they lose a lot of these games, all I'm saying is no reason to really be upset. We're back in the mode that, as a fan base, you've been in the last few years. And it's kind of going to be nice to not have to get as angry or upset when someone doesn't come through with a runner in scoring position or when a reliever blows a game. Because we were kind of, this was pie, right? This was all fool's gold. We were playing house, even though we knew we weren't going to end up together. They were not going to be a wild card team. They weren't going to make the playoffs. And for a little while, they hung around in the fight. But here are your reasons, in my opinion, most significant reasons to continue to watch night in and night out. I know I will, to continue to listen to Charlie and Dave here on 106.7 The Fan when you're in the car. Number one, James Wood is going to be must-see TV. What kind of stretch run does he have as he gets more comfortable? He is batting .455 over his last five games. We saw him have a four-hit performance, starting to lift the ball a little more. Does he go on a home run here at some point on this homestand? That would be nice. C.J. Abrams is trying to finish off a 20-homer, 30-steal season. What kind of final month plus 2 months, you know, last third of the season, basically, is he able to mount? And is he going to go 25, 35 and put together a really unique year from a steals and power standpoint that we haven't seen, as he's forged himself now into all-star conversation, played in the All-Star game this year, and into star status here in D.C. Another big storyline is, when does Dylan Cruz get called up? Do they call him up in the next week or two? Do they wait until September and keep his rookie eligibility available to him next year so that they can possibly get a draft pick as a reward for him winning the Rookie of the Year award if that were to happen next season? Is that something that they care about, or do they just call him up in the next few days and have him play the rest of the year in the big leagues. At some point, he'll be joining this team as their top prospect, and you'll have both Wood and Cruz in the corner outfield. And then lastly, if you want a reason to keep watching the Nats, the young pitching. Mackenzie Gore, Jake Irvin, the Mitchell Parker, DJ Herz, all trying to solidify themselves as answers going into 2025. How many of those guys are going to be fixtures in the rotation? They're all going to get a say in that based on how they perform down the stretch. And I think it's a huge, huge last 2 months more than anybody else for Mackenzie Gore, who's really hit a rough patch here and just hasn't thrown the ball well. And they feel like he could be a number two starter for them, a frontline type guy. But he's got to pitch like it and prove it going into the offseason to have a chance to be in the mix to be an opening day starter type for them moving forward. So there's a lot of reasons to continue to monitor, to continue to watch the Nationals as they come down the stretch even after the trade deadline. They were off yesterday. They're back in action tonight over at Nats Park. Game starts in about 50 minutes. Next, let's talk to my buddy Logan Paulson about Jaden Daniels. How has the kid looked out at camp? Logan's got some answers for us on Grant and Danny.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
Recovery from addiction can take many forms, and quite often, it's a team effort. For those in recovery, having support often leads to a better outcome. And for those supporting people in recovery, they celebrate every milestone. Here's to family, friends, loved ones, healthcare providers, and community groups who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. If you or someone you know is experiencing addiction, visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose to learn more about the various treatment options available.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Why does this room look amazing? What'd you change?
Oh, I just got these custom shades from Blinds.com. It's all online, so it's really easy. Great price, too.
Ugh, I remember shopping for Blinds. I waited around all day just to get a quote.
Hi, sorry I'm late. I know you said just the bedroom, but what do you feel about the
bathroom?
I
feel like I had to say yes, just to get rid of her.
All right, just go ahead and sign here and we'll get everything taken care of.
It took forever. And the worst part, hidden fees. How about you?
I chatted with my Blinds.com design consultant on my time, got free samples, and it was all super high quality at a great price. Plus, they make it easy to DIY or add installation like I did.
Blinds.com sounds way better.
Way better. And everything comes with their 100% satisfaction guarantee. Plus, check this out. I can control them from my phone.
Whoa, magic.
There's a better way. Shop Blinds.com for up to 45% off. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Norse sides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Nor Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Nor.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.